Okay, I'm on the line again with Derek DeKirchhoff.
Who's Hello, Bob.
How you doing, Derek? And you're in Nice or Rome?
I'm in Rome.
Okay. We are
at dusk.
All right. So we're beginning our, continue our series, this long essay I did. And we've done Baudrillard. Now we're doing Foucault. So scrolling down to the Foucault section, I say, after we do Baudrillard, that's in the previous recording, then I said, this leads naturally to the work of Michel Foucault. As a figure in the debate presented by Severo Lattrenge, the man who created the Semiotech series, Foucault replays the concerns in McLuhan's writings for the effects of visual space during the Gutenberg Galaxy 1500 to 1750 and their internalization at the beginning of the Marconi Galaxy 1850 to 1950. Then I have a quote from Foucault. It is not a mode of language, but a hollow that traverses like a great movement all literary languages. And that's from an interview in 66, collection of interviews, 66 to 84, 1989, page 22. Then, in the same article, he says, my procedure at this moment is of a regressive sort, I would say. I try to assume a greater and greater detachment in order to define the historical conditions and transformations of our knowledge. All right, so first of all, I have better quotes than that, but just to begin, the hollow...
No, it's a good start.
Yes, the hollow that traverses like a great movement all literary language would be visual space, abstract visual space.
Could be. I saw it more like the image that was used by Paul Levinson about literacy and its impact on everything, that it was like not so much like a shaker, but like a tint that would distribute along specific routes and color everything along its own, you know, light. And so that's what I read the hollow as, but yeah, sure, the hollow could be visual space.
Well, that's what I mean. It's an intensification of the visual, a tint. Which book or essay does Levinson say this in?
Can't remember. I think it's McLuhan Digital or something like that.
Oh, yeah, way back there, right. Okay.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm not talking something recent, but it's a very good image, and he sort of, you know, makes it understandable to many people.
It's an inky thing that spreads through.
It's
all...
easier to understand than the hollow, but I'll take the hollow for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, the hollow is this weird abstract space that happens to the mind and then the collectivity that everybody has to run around filling up. You know,
no, it's correct, and it's. It's itself the consciousness as theater.
Yes, yes. And theater in particular. Theater comes in with visual space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's made to actually select it and give it priority over the other senses for communication and understanding. And also makes it sort of starts the point of view. It doesn't give it right away, but soon enough you'll find the theater focusing the person into a specific point of view related to the stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, the whole series of quotes that come after that are very, very interesting, and the the comparison and the parallels with McLuhan's approach are absolutely, I've always thought, in fact, I remember Marshall commenting on The Archaeology of Knowledge, which was one of the books which was translated first and arrived in hardcover at the program. He actually annotated it quite a bit. He was very interested in the book. He instead of putting it down as he tended to do about anything that just came up,
yes.
He was rather complimentary, saying that's a very interesting book. And I think he did feel himself that there was a lot of parallels with his work.
Yes. Well, that'd be the reason he complimented. So the... I just wanted to say that you've written specifically in McLuhanism, your specialty was the effects of literacy creating theater. That's
yeah.
what you started off as. But this, what you just said about Foucault, you know that book, Subliminal Seduction, by Wilson Brian Key, I think his name is?
Yeah, I was there when Key was sort of barging into the office and working with McLuhan. He was very sort of, you know, self-assertive, I would say.
Yes. Well, and, you know, later McLuhan wrote a letter, it's public, saying, you know, you've embarrassed me. But anyways, his introductory essay in Subliminal Seduction by McLuhan begins with The Archaeology of Knowledge.
Mm.
That's how we, back then, if you read the book in 73, you'd know, oh, McLuhan knows about Foucault. You know, it was right there if you...
Well, you can, that's... the whole idea is actually summed up rather well with the idea of the cultural unconscious, which he doesn't equate with Jung's collective unconscious. And it's very interesting. I think that that's where McLuhan and Foucault meet.
Yes.
It's unraveling an unconscious drive of activities, whether it's language or more technology or social and political order. By and large, the ground, and you said somewhere, it's the, you know, what he calls the episteme is what McLuhan calls the ground.
Yes, yes. Now, what's interesting, he doesn't see it so precisely as McLuhan. He's got conceptual philosophy mixed in, so that's why he gets it sort of a little off. It's not a mode of language, but a hollow that traverses like a great movement all literary languages.
Yeah, but you have to remember he's French. You have to have some indulgence.
Okay. All right, so then talking about developing...
Hang in there for one sec, if you don't mind. Can you stop the recording?
No, I can't stop the recording. I'll screw up, but it's okay.
All right, I'll tell you what. Bear with me, because Dominique from the center is calling,
okay.
And I'm going to try and see if Maria Pia can start the discussion with her.
Okay, no problem.
All right, but she's not calling on this phone. She's calling on Skype, so I'm getting on Skype.
Okay.
And calling Maria Pia.
Yeah, it's appropriate. We have the director of the McLuhan program calling. It's very appropriate.
Yeah, so that's important. go ahead. We can continue this.
Okay, you ready? All right. So... talking about visual space creating perspective, like theater, the second quote, my procedure at this moment is of a regressive sort, I would say. I try to assume a greater and greater detachment in order to define the historical conditions and transformations of our knowledge. Well, that would have to be a complex detachment that is aware that visual space creates detachment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I understand it, but it felt like something I didn't have to understand.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So I didn't weigh a lot on this. Of course, detachment is point of view. So detachment is obviously a point of view, but I don't know that it's really key. What he wanted to say basically was that instead of getting to the surface, it's the ground business. Instead of getting to the surface of whatever discourse he would analyze or whatever discipline he would analyze, I think he simply said, let's pull back and question where that discipline itself comes from.
Yes.
Or where, see what I'm saying? And
yeah.
It's a pulling back.
He's calling that detachment.
The point of view.
He's calling that detachment.
Yeah.
Yeah. A perceptual detachment maybe of the environment we're inside of, the unconscious he's trying to describe. So then the next paragraph I say, McLuhan's methodology focused on making an inventory of these effects by providing a mosaic of a wide range of activities and notions in diverse fields during a large span of time. Then I have in brackets, see the centennial metaphor section in from Cliché d'Archétype, pages 35 to 41. Then I say, the following statements by Foucault illustrate the parallels with McLuhan's approach. So the first one is from a book called Foucault Live. And Foucault says, it's why I have tried to make, obviously in a rather particular style, the history not of thought in general, but of all that contains thought in a culture, of all in which there is thought.
That's beautifully expressed.
Yes, for there is thought. If you know McLuhan, that's beautifully expressed. If you understand McLuhan. So then he says, for there is thought in philosophy, but also in a novel. I'll do that again. For there is thought in philosophy, but also in a novel, in jurisprudence, in law, in an administrative system, and in a prison.
And in a prison.
There he is inventorying where visual space is.
Mm-hmm.
And visual space frames thought. Thought is the content of visual space.
Yeah, although while visual space is dominant, I understand Foucault as also... being somehow subconsciously aware of the tactile sense, the prison, for example, the idea of the walls that you know circle somebody are reflected into the walls of institutions and traditions, and how, for example, in A History of Madness, how the theoretical approach to sanity was building a wall to separate the mad from the non-mad. So, no, but this is what I'm saying. There's something more than the visual.
Yes.
In there, there's also something of the constrainment, strength line of force, if you
yeah.
see. I kind of, in fact, Marshall wouldn't disagree. He also thought in terms of lines of force.
Yes, he did. So I was just getting an idea as we're talking that because Foucault and the, what do you call them, the intellectual terrorists, the postmoderns, post-structuralists come after McLuhan, they actually mix percept and concept. They're mixing it. That's
mm-hmm.
why they're more complex in the way they write. They're
mm-hmm.
they're not going totally with McLuhan on just pure ground analysis. They have
no.
to filter in their abstract French tradition of conceptual
mm-hmm.
thinking, you know, their habit. And that's why
well,
it gets
that's,
mixed up.
That's one archaeology that needs still to be probed. What's the archaeology supporting? Archaeology supporting the way Michel Foucault approaches the archaeology of
yes, knowledge. Yes, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, it's, and I'm sure he would be the first to agree that is to be probed. And I don't have not read everything he wrote, and maybe he did write about, you know, what did he see as his own underpinning, so to speak.
Right. Well, let's see. I got a bunch of quotes here. So the next quote is, he says, I wanted to do, and this is from the same book, Foucault Live, I wanted to do in a historian's work by showing the simultaneous functioning of these discourses and the transformations which accounted for their visible changes.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
there are
well,
changes, not necessarily visual space, but they're visible. He's emphasizing the eye.
Yeah. That could be translation as well. Because what he might have said is évident, and somebody might have preferred it visible. You can't be sure. I don't know the original. But, again, I don't know whether we need to make that point much more, because it's, again, I see more of the problems of the French language in this particular case than I would see it in particular the way Foucault approaches things, because he deals first of all with discourse, and discourse is in this case he talks about written stuff, but he also talks about the discourse of things which are not written. That's not visual.
That's right.
That's not visual. That's it may not be acoustic, because we don't know whether he was reading James Joyce, but we know that he was perceiving that. He wasn't just conceptualizing. And then again, he's talking French, and he's talking to French people, and he's right, and he's a professor, so he has to use this French conceptual thing. Don't forget, all these turkeys have been destroyed by Descartes.
Yes. Now, in page 136 of From Cliché to Archetype, McLuhan lays out 8 types of plenary awareness or cultural bias, and he has the bias of the French is acoustic. I know
yes.
it au fond. Now, my understanding or my projection of McLuhanism is, because the extension of tactility threatened all particular cultures and acoustic bias, visual bias, kinetic bias, the French bring their acoustic, natural acoustic depth perception and are have to flip to another modality because the acoustic is threatened. So they flip to a visual space more than they were, just as the British flip from their visual bias to acoustic by emphasizing the Beatles and rock and roll. And the Americans flip into a...
Yeah, but for one thing, I've always found amusing that particular...
page.
...reference of McLuhan au fond, because it's not right. It's à fond. And à fond, au fond is visual. It means at the bottom of whatever space you're talking about. À fond means in totality.
All right.
So that was a mistake on the... Sorry to say it.
No, that's all right, but
beg
did you...
Beg forgiveness for the great master, but he did that. You know, every now and then he slipped, and this is a slip.
Well, the book was messy anyways because he's having a problem with Wilson. But do you correct it in your translation?
Of course I did, but I didn't make a point of it, which I should have. Had
right.
I had my discussion with you at this point, I would have. I would
okay.
have put a footnote.
Right. Okay, so... the next quote, page, now this is where he gets a bit out of the visual. Page 51 of Foucault Live, he says, I wanted to displace it, to analyze the discourses themselves, that is, these discursive practices that are intermediary between words and things, these
mm-hmm.
discursive practices starting from which one can define what are the things and mark out the uses of words. And I put in brackets, in this last quotation, Foucault seeks to make the interval of the discursive practices a transparent manifest in the style of McLuhan and Nevitt's writing. So if you're seeing him move into something acoustic or something tactile, That's what I get from this sentence.
You could. Yeah, you could.
All right.
But you have to remember that Foucault, it's hard to pull Foucault out of structuralism.
Yeah.
Because what he's really talking about is the structure of this course and all its manifestation. And it's absolutely a brilliant way of approaching the problem, but it remains a kind of, you know, of a structuralist. He's not a post-structuralist. He really is a structuralist deep down.
Yeah, like amoral, a-structuralist.
And that's a conceptual dimension in it, in fact.
Yeah, do you mean a-structuralist as in amoral or just a, the structuralist?
No. I use it as the article. No. He's one of the most powerful explainer or at least demonstrator of structuralism.
Right. Now, my agenda here is to show Baudrillard and everybody redoing closely McLuhan, because the effect of the global theater is making everybody begin to see what McLuhan saw, because the technology makes you see media ecology, because it moves you beyond language. See? So
yes.
It may not be exact, but they're actually following the footsteps of McLuhan, and McLuhan may have been the only one who knew that he moved to a media ecology structuralist approach. He used to call it structuralism or phenomenalism. He moved to that because the media forced him to. But he knew that, so he was really quite detached about what the effects that he was laying out. He knew that the electric mode made him that way. And so that Foucault and the rest of them are following along and becoming, they think it's a breakthrough in knowledge, how they're seeing the limitations of visual space in all of them, in all the Gutenberg categories, and they don't know, they're just following into the electronic hypnosis.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because Foucault, I don't think, had read McLuhan. I don't know if there's any
evidence. Yes, I spoke to a man who was a close friend of him in New York, a professor and everything. He was a host of Foucault every time he went to New York City. He said he never heard Foucault mention McLuhan once and basically didn't know who McLuhan was, this guy said.
That's right.
Yes.
So that's what I think. Whereas I would not be quite so sure about Baudrillard.
Baudrillard, his first writing was a review of Medium as a Massage or Understanding Media in 1967.
Exactly. So I don't think that and of all the French, I don't even think that Derrida read.
Yes, he did. He made a statement in 1971 at McGill. This is what Thiel comments on, and he says, "No, McLuhan's wrong. It's not acoustic space is our origins. It's writing space." So he purposely set up a dynamic emphasizing visual
did
space.
Did you say that, eh?
Yes, in a book.
I would have known that for sure.
Yeah, he made this. I don't know if Thiel's at the conference, but there was a conference, I think, in McGill in 71, and Thiel used to quote the book that it was in. The lecture was...
Oh, that's good to know. That's interesting.
Right, but here's, he willfully, he said,
trust
no,
you.
It's not acoustic space, it's writing. Now, I would say, McLuhan being a visual Canadian, he was fascinated about learning about acoustic space as an antidote to the tactile identity threat that tactility extended made on everybody. But here's Foucault saying, no, it's not acoustic. I'm an acoustic person, so it can't be that, and I've got to become visual because this tactility is driving us crazy. So he takes the origins as visual. That's my eccentric theory on why he not only went opposite McLuhan, he had to, being a French au fonder. Or Afon.
Yeah. Hang on in there. Can you hang on?
Yeah. We the next quote is again from Foucault Live. It says he writes, "By archaeology, I would like to designate not exactly a discipline, but a domain of research, which would be the following." Then he has a colon, and then he says, "In a society, different bodies of learning, philosophical ideas, everyday opinions, but also institutions, commercial practices, and police activities and mores, M-O-R-E-S, all refer to a certain implicit knowledge," in brackets he calls that savoir, "special to this society. This knowledge is profoundly different from the bodies of learning that one can find in scientific books, philosophical theories, and religious justifications. But it is what makes possible at a given moment the appearance of a theory, an opinion, a practice. Thus, in order for the big centers of internment to be opened at the end of the 17th century, it was necessary that a certain knowledge of madness be opposed to non-madness, of order to disorder. And it's this knowledge, or savoir, that I wanted to investigate. as the condition of possibility of knowledge, which he calls connaissance, of institutions or practices. So he wanted to investigate as a condition of possibility of knowledge of institutions or practices. So even though he excludes scientific books, philosophic theories, and religious justifications, he's talking about a new ground that one could look at as conditioning all these different aspects all across the spectrum of social activities. Do you see that?
Oh, of course I do. And in fact, while you were reading this, I was thinking of something which has now escaped my mind, but I'm trying to recover it because it was exactly connected with his definition of digging into the various structures of thought that underpin all these things.
I will read the next couple of sentences I write, which probably will trigger what you're saying. Here's what I say. I say, Foucault substitutes savoir for McLuhan's ground or medium.
Right.
And connaissance for figure or content.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say,
yes.
the effect
cool.
of their...
That's fine, and that actually says it all.
Right. The effect of their interplay, Foucault designates as episteme. How does he say it? Episteme?
Episteme. In French, it's episteme. But what it means, it's the structure of knowledge, the condition of thinking, the condition of knowledge. Epistemology is the science of how you know things.
All right. Okay, so then there's this long quote from Foucault Live where he says, when I speak of episteme.
You can say episteme in English.
Right, right.
It's episteme.
Right. He said, when I speak of episteme, I mean all those relationships which existed between the various sectors of science during a given epoch. For example, I'm thinking of the fact that at a certain point, mathematics was used for research in physics, while
yes.
linguistics, or if you will, semiology, the science of signs, was used by biology to deal with genetic messages. Likewise, the theory of evolution was used by or served as a model for historians, psychologists, and sociologists of the 18th century. All these phenomena of relationship between the sciences or between the various scientific sectors constitute what I call the episteme of an epoch.
Yeah, well, you could actually say with Kuhn, the paradigm.
Yes, yes.
Structure
of scientific revolutions.
Yes,
yeah,
it's a paradigmatic conditioning of all kinds of different effects. It's, you know, the galaxy.
That's right. Now listen
really
to this.
Is.
McLuhan talked about the three Copernican revolutions, Copernicus himself, and then Kant, and the third Copernican revolution was pattern recognition, which came in, 100 years ago. Foucault and these guys are responding to McLuhan's third Copernican revolution. There's enough information to start to see figure ground in cultural factors.
There is. There is, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's the division in the various paradigmatic change that I find absolutely interesting. Now, you know, how would we call our present Copernican revolution?
Okay, let me just finish this quote before we get to that. So he says, thus, for me, episteme has nothing to do with the Kantian categories. I simply know, and then there's dot, 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 so there might be some other sentence. Then he says, I simply noted that the problem of order, in brackets the problem, not the category, or rather the need to introduce an order among series of numbers and human beings or values, appears simultaneously in many different disciplines in the 17th century. This involves the communication between the diverse disciplines. And so it was that someone who proposed, for example, the creation of a universal language in the 17th century was quite close in terms of procedure to someone who dealt with the problem of how one could catalog human beings. It's a question of relationships and communication among the various sciences. This is what I call episteme, and it has nothing to do with the Kantian categories. So we, as familiar with McLuhan, see that this is the French version of seeing the Third Copernican Revolution, or participating in the third.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth, I might have had another thought, but I forget it now. The fourth Copernican Revolution would be what I call the Android meme, the technology coming alive and replaying all these revolutions right in front of us.
Yes. But I think further down or previously, I'm not sure because I haven't got the text under my eyes for the moment, there is a reference to technology and the word techne as being misleading. But yes, technology is part of that discourse, and there is a discourse of technology, but we must go much beyond that and find that everything that we use, for example, governing practices or legal institutions are themselves technologies.
Yes, and you're saying the word is techne. Techne.
That's right. And he says, let's not get ourselves too wrapped up in the hardcore or the hardware of technology. There's also a lot of software that could, one should call technology way before anything digital was ever thought about.
That's right, and maybe that's what I mean by meme. The thing is,